One of Johnson's most loyal followers was Carol Keach, who would serve as his chauffeur. Together, the two men drove every square mile of the hill country, tracing every dirt path and cow trail. Spotting some out-of-the-way farmhouse, Johnson would get out of the car, walk to the door, introduce himself to the startled inhabitants, listen patiently to their problems, then leave with a hearty handshake and a gentle plea for their vote. Convening meetings in dusty towns consisting mainly of a church and a gas station, he would deliver his speech, then mingle with the audience, and spend at least a few minutes with everyone present. He had an incredible memory for faces and names. If he happened to meet the same person twice, he could recall everything he or she had said the first time around. And he often impressed strangers by knowing someone who knew them. He listened intensely and was always careful to leave people with the feeling that they would see him again, and that if he won, they would finally have someone looking out for their interests in Washington. In bars, grocery stores, and gas stations all through the hill country, he would talk with the locals as if he had nothing else to do. On leaving, he would make sure to buy something, candy, groceries, gasoline, a gesture they greatly appreciated. He had the gift of creating a connection. As the race ran on, Johnson went days without sleep, his voice turning hoarse, his eyes drooping. As Keach drove the length of the district, he would listen in amazement as the exhausted candidate in the car muttered to himself about the people he had just met, the impression he had made, what he could have done better. Johnson never wanted to seem desperate or patronizing. It was that last handshake and look in the eye that mattered. The polls were deceptive. They continued to show Johnson behind, but he knew he had won votes that no poll would register. And in any case, he was slowly catching up. By the last week, he had crept into third place. Now, suddenly, the other candidates took notice. The election turned nasty. Johnson was attacked for his youth, for his blind support of Roosevelt, for anything that could be dug up. Trying to win a few votes in Austin, Johnson came up against the political machine of Mayor Miller, who disliked him and did everything possible to sabotage his campaign. Undeterred, Johnson personally visited the mayor several times in that last week to broker some kind of truce. But Miller saw through his charm. His personal appeal might have won over the district's poorest voters, but the other candidates saw a different side of him. He was ruthless and capable of slinging mud. As he rose in the polls, he made more and more enemies. On election day, Johnson pulled off one of the greatest upsets in American political history, outdistancing his nearest rival by 3,000 votes. Exhausted by the grueling pace he had set, he was hospitalized. But the day after his victory, he was back at work. He had something extremely important to do. From his hospital bed, Johnson dictated letters to his rivals in the race. He congratulated them for running a great campaign. He also described his own victory as a fluke, a vote for Roosevelt more than for himself. Learning that Miller was visiting Washington, Johnson telegraphed his connections in the city to chaperone the mayor and treat him like royalty. As soon as Johnson left the hospital, he paid visits to his rivals and acted with almost embarrassing humility. He even befriended Polk's brother, driving him around town to run errands.